The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I can say that this is maybe the nicest, at the very least, this is the coziest spot I have ever done the pod from. I am at Kelly Mason's place. There is a fire going because the weather still sucks here in Niagara. And I'm with one of my favorites, third time on the pod. It is Kelly Mason, winemaker for Domaine Cailloux, winemaker for Kelly Mason or Mason Vineyard. Kelly, thank you so much for being on the pod again.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for doing this in front of a fire on, it's May 14th. Who would have thought? I had moved all the wood out and now we need it back.
It's miserable cold. I still have my winter jacket. I picked the wrong 2 weeks to be here in Niagara. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's funny. I'm going to move the chair on a little bit because we're talking to each other, but I'm staring at the fire, which seems weird. It feels like eye contact, kind of important for an interview. Actually, let's start here.
I know you. Yeah. You can look at the fire.
I know. It still seems a little odd. When the weather is this cold and this wet for this part of May, does that have any impact yet on what do you think the final product is going to be for your wines? Or is it still too early and you're not bummed out beyond the fact that it's cold out?
I think it affects my motivation, that's for sure, because, you know, you still have to do what needs to get done. You just don't have any warmth or sunshine. But in terms of the vintage, way too soon to tell. I mean, we often get asked at harvest, you know, what do you think of the current vintage once you have the grapes in tank? And it's still too soon. You really don't know until you blend the wine.
Right.
And it comes. And that's like 18 months down the road. It feels like forever. But it's exciting time right now because you just have these little buds and everything is hopeful. Everything is possible. You're excited for the new growing season until the first like hailstorm or the first heavy rains. So right now it's just fresh and we're optimistic.
Yeah. So May is still optimism. What's the period of time where everything is the most sensitive? You know, is there like first 2 weeks in September? Like when is that period when you're like, you know what, these next 12 days, I really hope for optimal conditions. And I guess it maybe depends partially on where your grapes are and which grapes they are.
So funny enough, it's like last week was one of the most sensitive times because we had bud burst and you're kind of sitting on pins and needles in, if you get that warm weather in April where people love it and the Toronto patios are filled with people drinking beer early, that's the kiss of death in a vineyard because the plant starts to want to party too and be social and come alive. And if we then suddenly have a frost, which we often do, you know, don't plant in your garden until after the May 2-4 weekend. Well, you can't make that choice with vines. They're going to go into bud burst. So the biggest stressful time is really just the last week. And I feel like we're close to out of it, but it's definitely been cold. And then, of course, you have like near harvest if the weather turns. That's the other most stressful time is hearing the rain hit the roof around September 20th when you still have Pinot grapes.
Right. Yeah.
For me, those are my two, like where I actually can feel my blood pressure, like just going.
Late April, mid-September.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is if people are enjoying Mason Rosé in mid-April in Toronto, that's great for you and that's also horrible for you at the same
100%,
time. 100%. Yeah, if they're on the patio.
So although I'm saying, you know, it's a little bit, you know, motivation is maybe a little more sluggish right now just because of the weather, I am grateful for it because we did have a cold April. So there was nothing that got ahead. It's making tractor work a little harder right now because of the rain. But in terms of actual bud burst, it slowed it down. Perfect for what we needed.
All right. Okay, good. That makes me happy to hear that. It's funny. I was driving up here. And I noticed, oh, you've got a little fence and you've got the Mason logo. And I'm like, oh, wow, you've expanded. I thought that was the extent of the expansion of your winery and home here. And then you give me a little bit of tour. There is trenches being built. There is workers everywhere. What is going on? And we'll get back to the wine, but what is going on in terms of the hospitality side of Mason Vineyard?
When I started hosting people here back in the beginning, now we're going into our sixth vintage right now, and the very first time people were coming out just into the backyard, and I really had apprehension, and I was thinking, you know, we don't have enough. Like, who do I think I am? Can we actually host people? And 15 people would come, and I realized quickly after the nerves wore off, I realized people enjoy just tasting the wine and talking, and I get a chance to get to know the customers. So we decided to just take that up a little more last year. We are now, I think one of the myths about Mason is that it hasn't always been super accessible. How do you get the wine? And now we are actually hosting tastings. We are open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in the summertime. And we do these really amazing educational tastings. It's really for the people who are into Pinot and Chardonnay and Cabernet Franc on the bench. So we do three different experiences. We're just getting all the different service bars set up.
All the different service bars. That little set of words is so ambitious. It is so ambitious what's going on here. Obviously, I can't see the finished product. It's gray. It's rainy. The workers are here. I can't wait to come back in, you know, sometime in June or July. But this is a lot what you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot to execute. But I think I knew that we were onto something. It felt like I've known Matt for a while, and I am introverted by nature. You know, I'm not really like a salesperson. And so having people come up here for the first time, I was a little bit nervous about it. But within the first couple of days, suddenly I felt comfortable. I felt like I was connecting with people. It was actually a positive experience, social experience for me. And I found that everybody loved Pinot and Chard, and that these were kind of my people. And so doing this expansion, although it's a little bit daunting, I mean, there are so many logistics behind everything. I think it's absolutely worth it. I get to meet more customers, and we're really trying to just be about the vineyard. There is nothing. So I don't think people know, to your point, coming up the driveway where you saw the sign, people don't really know what to expect. And I like that because it gives us a clean slate, like a framework to surprise you. And that's what we're trying to do, is it's really just about the wine. The staff that's here is so knowledgeable. It's about giving the customer one of the best experiences I hope that they have in Niagara, that I hope they go home and a couple days later they're with their partner or their friends and they're saying, that was interesting what we did there. That was different.
So really the only hard part of all of this, not the enjoyment, not the wine, not the view, it's the turning off of King. It's the most important part. I know what I'm doing, but I'm sure there's lots of people going, I've passed your place three times. I can't find the driveway.
It happens. We have a sign at the bottom during when we're open. Right now we're closed. However, it does get missed, and I'm having an internal discussion about how big of a sign can I have at the bottom of the driveway. I am still struggling a little with the fact that
I don't want to be ostentatious.
I don't want everybody to know exactly where we are. But I can't, I'm telling you, that's just me as like a business owner. Yeah. But hello, Kelly, you're a business owner. You need to put a larger sign. Last year it was too small. But I just feel like I appreciate our customers, that they know who we are. They're coming for a reason. And I just want to keep that as long as I possibly can.
Well, it's not about it being exclusive, but you just like, it's this tucked away little secret, but it's both inclusive, but it's also this little secret.
Yeah.
I think you have to go the other way. You know, the giant inflatable men that would be at used car dealerships.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like have a giant
at a tire factory or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Up. Can you imagine? Just a big grape Pinot grape.
Yeah, just a big Pinot grape with your face on the top or something. That would be hilarious. How much better are you now at talking about your wine than you were when you got started?
So much better, I think. It's just practice. And I think when you work for yourself and it's your own wine, you can say exactly what you think because you're wearing it. You're the one that is covering all the bills and hiring the people. And you have to stand up for what you believe in. I have to stand up for why did I do this to begin with. So I feel like I'm a lot more comfortable just being myself. I think what was harder was the pressure I would put on myself when I was working for other wineries. And I still do. I really don't want to let their owners down. I have to represent what they stand for. Luckily, we are aligned because I would generally work with people that also wanted wild ferment and whatnot. But when it's my own, I feel a lot more confident in just, it's okay to be yourself. And I hope that the people like that. And if you don't get it and you don't like it, I might not be the style of wine that you're after. And I'm okay with that.
So what are we going to try? It's funny. You're the one of the easiest people I ever interview. I could show you my questions. I only wrote like three or four. Usually I have like 18 or 20. I only have three or four because I've just hearing you talk, there's a lot of different directions I want to go in. We will we'll put a pin in for 1 second because you've been nice enough. What are we going to be tasting? And by the way, I did email you recently. You were worried about, I think it was your 21 Pinot Noir.
Yes.
And I was.
Thank you again for that.
I opened it, this was a couple months ago, decanted it for about an hour and a half, and it did my favorite thing, where you pour, and it's a very simple thing. You smell, and you just do this. Oh! And then you take a sip, and you make that noise. Maybe not outwardly, because people might think you're crazy if you're on your own, but at least inwardly. And that was the first instance with your 21 Pinot. I got the full, oh! And then, you know, then I dug in and did all the nerdy wine stuff. But it was drinking beautifully a couple months ago.
And you know, I had just done the same thing. And I had just done the same thing for the very first time since I released it. I did not go back to that wine because 21 was such a hard vintage. And there was a documentary that was done called Crush. And you
Which
can
you were
see,
great in.
Thank you. I think everyone did a great job. But I can remember seeing myself walking through the vineyard, and it's the Pinot. It's the 21 harvest and all the Pinots on the ground because we had to drop so much. So that wine has always been, you know, emotional for me. And I did go back to it. My goodness, it has become so much better in bottle. So if you have that wine, and I still have some of it. So we're getting set up to do an awesome vertical, I think, next year with Mason. We'll do 21, 22, 23, 24, 25.
Does it make it more worth it when you... Probably not. I was going to say when you drink, maybe, you know, it's funny when you break up with someone, you sometimes forget the bad and you only remember the good.
Yes.
So when you were drinking the 21, did it make you forget or suppress all the negative you had back in 21?
Yeah. No, I still hated 21. I'm better with the exes and seeing the good in them than I am in Pinot.
So what are we going to try first?
So I thought we would try the new 24 Chardonnay, the Lavenir, and then of course the Pinot and the Cab Franc.
Perfect.
It's just the three like flagship estate wines, and I think it'd be fun for you to see them.
Love it. Let's try, and we'll be back in one moment. And we are back, and great job first by Kelly. You got the fire going again, and within seconds, look at it. That is roaring. We have a roaring fire, a full-bodied or medium-bodied Chardonnay. I'll figure out in a second. You know what? Life is pretty good.
Life is great, you know? Life is great, and I think about that because... I was thinking about this morning because I'm like, what's Matt going to ask me? And he's going to ask me, what's the difference like between your life now? Are you working as hard as you still did 5 years ago? I was expecting that question. And I was thinking about it and I was like, you know what? I don't even define anymore the difference between work and non-work. It's the truth. It's just how I live my life. My days are really full and busy, but I've come to a point where I don't feel like I'm really sacrificing anything anymore. This is my life and I live a really good life.
Do you go to bed most days happy and do you wake up most days happy?
Yes.
Or good?
Yes. Most. Yes. I also have some that are more challenging than others,
of
like
course.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yes. For the most part, I'm happy and I'm still pinching myself.
Yeah. And you're satisfied and you're still ambitious and you're still growing. Yeah. I mean, the fact that all this expansion that you are doing, I mean, you're selling yourself. So you must have a lot of joy. Otherwise, who'd expand like this if they didn't take a lot of satisfaction what they did?
Yeah, it's a lot of pride. I'm proud of the wines for sure, but I'm also proud of this like really small team that we have, and they believe. And you know, any entrepreneur out there, you have to believe in yourself for sure. But if you can hire people and have people join and come on board that really believe in what you're doing, you feel like I feel an ownership in the sense of I need to give them a great opportunity to work here. It's symbiotic and it's amazing. I feel like they're part of the business.
And there also must be a little bit of pressure. Like you want to do well because if these people believe in you, you want to show them, you know, you want to reward them for your belief.
Unbelievable to think that there's a payroll with Mason Vineyard now. That is the hardest thing. Those are when you say like, are most days good? Yes, they're good, but I'm still accountable to paying people now too. And it's all those little steps that you grow into. And if you would have said 5 years ago, you're going to have to do this and then you're going to hire this. And I would have said, no, I can't. I don't think I have the skill set to do that. And you're just throwing yourself into it.
So let's talk about the Chardonnay. What vintage is this?
So this is 2024. This is off of the estate. This is the Chardonnay that I planted back in 2017 and 2018. And the idea behind all the Chardonnay that I make off this property is never to over oak the Chardonnay, to really just let the expression of the 20 Mile Bench show. I think this wine has just a gorgeous like citrus nose. It's got that leanness, but then on the mid palate, because it's also fermented in barrel, you have weight. And then it finishes again, like clean and crisp. Just like, I mean, I think this is a beautiful Chardonnay.
It is. It's crisp at the start, but I like the mid. And it's funny, I think some people get nervous. I think some winemakers, they want to distance themselves from saying there's oak, because oak is often a bad term, and it's why people say I don't like Chardonnay, because I don't like oaky Chardonnay. I'm like, no, you don't like, you don't like shitty mass-produced Chardonnay. There's a difference.
Yeah.
I love the oak. I love the full-bodiness of this. This is a great Chardonnay.
Thank you. I think oak is, you know, I wrote in the tasting notes on this, like, I will die on the hill of over-oak Chardonnay. I don't agree that it has a place here in Niagara. Mm-hmm. What gives us our competitive advantage is our site, our soils, and really just the beauty of Chardonnay on the bench. The second you go in and heavy-handed oak a lot of Chardonnay, you've completely ruined what makes us shine. So even though I have oak on this, it's very subtle. It should just be complementary and really well integrated.
It helps on the structure of it. I think overly oaked Chardonnay screams of insecurity, or we made a bad wine, so let's do this, so people distract.
Sure. I mean, that's always an option, because that's the best way to hide high alcohol or if there is a flaw. But then, to the winemakers out there that are using a lot of oak that are maybe in a different region, I think if you're not in a cool climate and you're in a warmer climate, there might be a better place for more oak, for sure. It might not work if you did 20 or 15% new oak. But here in Niagara, I think that you need to be really careful with how much oak you use.
How important is it, getting back on the idea of messaging, how important is it to start phasing out the word Burgundian?
I think it's really important. We are making world-class wines. We have been making world-class wines for a long time now. I feel like provincially and nationally, we're really gaining some traction on that. I think we need to just be proud. We're sitting on the 20-mile bench right now. There's other benches also. And it's about highlighting what we can do best and just saying 20-mile bench Chardonnay. Ideally, we start with Niagara, but I don't think we need to keep referencing ourselves to other places in the world. I think we need to be proud of who we are.
And just, and also just being able to start to tell the difference. Oh, this is a Niagara Shard. Oh, this is a Peck Shard. And then for the smaller group, it's, this is the
20-mile bench.
This is 20-mile bench.
Lincoln Lakeshore. Yeah. Absolutely. And and you're right. It's the messaging. And it's all of us. And it's a huge group of winemakers, of owners, of sommeliers, of media, of people like yourself, just constantly saying and repeating this and spreading the word.
Yeah, Chardonnay is one of my favorites.
Yes.
And I got to a point where I realized if I was only allowed to buy Ontario Chardonnay, I'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Where I could go get inexpensive Chard from Henry of Pelham or June's Vineyard at 13th Street. Mm-hmm. I could go to see you, to Kay Luce, to Batchelder, to Westcott. Like, we are at the point now in Niagara where, and I'm not saying don't, I'm saying please try Chardonnay from all over the world. Yeah. And Hawke's Bay makes a great one, and, you know, South Island, New Zealand. I mean, I've been yammering a lot about it, but Niagara's at the point now with whatever style and price point, this province has you covered.
Yeah, that's a good point. We can cover all of your Chardonnay needs here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, start trying them out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I agree with you on that one for sure.
Yeah, so anyone out there that misses their Napa and Sonoma Chard, I get it. Rombauer, shout out. You make great Chardonnay. But if you cannot get it, fear not, we're fine. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to go back to, and I actually forgot about it for a second. I imagine, going back to you hosting these events and people come in, you said people just want to come and they want to try the wine and they want to talk. I'm trying to think of, is there anything more personal when it comes to food or beverage? Is there anything more personal than wine?
I'm trying to find something where, you know, you're sitting with your friends and it's like, it's very connecting also.
Well, I'll pontificate for a second. I don't think it can be any sort of meat, because then you're hanging around the cow and then an hour later you're having a ribeye. That, you know, that's a little uncomfortable.
Not everyone's going to want that, for sure.
So I'm going to get rid of all meat.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you can feel something when it comes to vegetables because a beautiful garden. So I think there can be some connection there. You know, with beer, there certainly is. But with beer, every year is kind of the same. Most spirits, every year is kind of the same. But with wine, every vintage tells a story, and the story is where the personality comes from and the struggle, 2021, you know, man versus man versus nature, or Mason versus Mason, Mason versus nature. So I can't think of anything more personal than, and I'm wildly biased, but than wine.
Yeah. And if you like wine, people, it just starts such a connection and such a conversation. And I've seen that. And I start to see like generalizations between people who just love Chardonnay, people who don't love Chardonnay, people who love Pinot versus Bordeaux. And I see it around the tables here. And then table starts talking with another table. And I'm sure many other people at wineries here in Niagara have experienced that. And you see, like, I always joke that you can tell the Pinot Noir lovers right away because they will strike up another conversation. And I used to, I have like, I could have pulled data on this because I would mix people at the same table when I first started.
Really?
And you could see the Pinot lovers, and then I would just watch and I would just do a countdown, and it would be minutes before they would have their cell phones out, the Pinot lovers, strangers, just meeting for the, and they're exchanging Excel spreadsheets on their Pinot. And then they're talking about producers, about vineyards that they visited. Whereas I would find with Bordeaux lovers, they are passionate as well about their Bordeaux blends, but they're talking more about the travel and the food and that sort of an experience. Whereas Pinot lovers are really cerebral and geeky, and they want to show you what they have via Excel.
Via Excel, but the one picture they all want to show is the one of the little stone fence by DRC. It's
totally.
it's like see this is, and then you know, well, I was here at Chambertin, and yep. then and then there's going to be that as well. Also, you can tell the Pinot lovers, they're the ones that mushroom, funky, earthy. Those words will be said very
all
early
the time,
on.
Right away. Yeah, baking spices.
Yeah, I love that. Also, the other thing, I think one big advantage that you have is, everyone's going to be rooting for you. If anyone is talking to you and they say, oh, this is Kelly and your passion for it. Oh, and there's her vines that she's walking into, that she has built. If someone has the option of buying two bottles of Pinot and they're around the same price and they're around the same quality, I think more people will buy from you because of the connection, because they feel a bond, because they've met you. And they're also rooting for you to succeed. So for them, when they're buying their wine, when they're buying your wine, they feel in a small amount, they're helping to contribute to your ability to wake up happy.
Yeah, I think they are, you know, and I'm forever grateful for that. I get to do something I love every day because of these people that feel like they're hopefully loving the wine, but they're also contributing to something. And that's never lost on me whatsoever that I get this amazing opportunity to meet these people. And when I had started, even before we opened, like, I don't think it's a misconception, but this, I hate saying this brand, but because it's got my name on it. And, you know, I know there's other wineries and winemakers with their name on it. And that was never my intention. It was always going to be called something else. They had been following people that had Mason Vineyard, at least, in another bottle of wine at previous projects that I had worked on. So the brand came up like with time, but people were following. And when I first opened, I would receive emails like from people. It's been going on for a while now where people are just like coming out and they purchase wine. And it got to last year when we actually opened for tasting, I was having a hard time thinking about, I never even charged for tastings. This is going back to the business side of things where sometimes I'm just so passionate, I just do whatever. And we had to charge for tastings. And so I was trying to think about, how do I do this to say thank you to everybody that has been with us since before we even had wine in a bottle. And so we created this program. I created it, and we just called it the Mason Vineyard Circle because we couldn't think of what else like to call it. And really, it's not a wine club. It has not, you don't have to buy anything. It's just a way that I say thank you back to the customers. And so I group people into three different groups. And every year at the start of the new year, we get to think about what can we do to say thank you. So we'll do events for them, like non-ticketed, some's ticketed, some's free. And it's just a way that I get to give back and say to them, thanks so much for coming out here and purchasing the wine.
All right. Couple things I got to get to. First, last thought on the Chardonnay. What I like about it, it gets closest to this line. Like you mentioned, it's got this almost sweet orange, but it is, there's nothing tropical about it. This is still cool climate, acidic, stone fruit.
Nothing tropical.
No, that's
trying so hard to never make that.
And it's not there. But it has this warmth to it that I think someone at first might start to lean tropical. But then when you have the second sip and you think about it, it's like, no. I'll get rid of the word juicy. I'll get rid of the word sweet, and it's more juicy orange, juicy stone fruit.
Yep.
But yet with the acidity holding it all together to say, no, you're not going over to tropical.
Exactly. Like,
you know when you see a parent and they got a kid on a leash?
Yeah.
That's the acidity.
That's perfect.
And the kid wants to run over to the tropical. Yeah. Like, no, you're staying here and you're acidic and you're linear.
Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to do, is have it be linear, but then still you have some roundness on the finish, which comes from the oak. And I mean, we bottled this at the end of February. So really, Matt, like, it still needs maybe another month. It's only going to get a little more weight in the bottle. But I think it's showing beautifully for where it is right now, and it's definitely ready to be released.
If I wasn't so lazy, I'd probably edit out the first part of my tasting note. I got there by the end, but I was sort of circling around. Okay, question two. What were you going to name Mason Vineyard? What were some of the other names you were thinking?
So I never, ever wanted it to have my name, because that felt like way too much pressure. And so I wanted to call it Landed. Mm-hmm. Just L-A-N-D-E-D. Mm-hmm. And that's actually what the Cabernet Franc is called. And that's because at the time I was working at Caylus and Thomas had come back from a trip. And he said to me, I learned this term in England. Do you know what they call people that have land? They call them landed. And I thought that was so cool. And then in his charming, like, just, you know, lovable way, he just looks at me and goes, you are landed, my dear.
Oh.
Yes. And I just remembered it. And I always thought, that's it. That's what I'll call the place. Now, I did not. Landed means you generally inherited it from a place. So it didn't quite totally fit, because I didn't inherit the place. But so when I went to name the wines, that's why the Cabernet Franc is called Landed, because I inherited all those old vines from the farmers before me.
How much easier would your life have been if you did inherit all of this and you didn't have to pay for it?
If only, like, the mason jars out there were my family.
Yeah.
I feel like it could have been, if I think about that, I still dream sometimes, like, if only I just had a couple million.
Yeah, and then you'd have one less. So that's the joke goes.
Yeah, but I'm glad to have had to have done it the way that I did it. I learned a lot for sure.
The last question, I'll give you a second to think about it, because I'm assuming the Pinot Noir next.
Yeah, let's do that next.
All right, so the question is, how much did you struggle? And don't answer it now.
Okay.
This is like when I do radio. And coming up after the break, on the other side, Kelly Mason reveals how much struggle did she have when it came to charging for tasting? Economics versus being an artist. That's coming up next. And we are back. The fire, well-maintained.
Yeah, it's
We didn't have to do anything, Kelly, from the last time. It's still going strong.
We're ready.
Yeah.
We're pioneers.
I would be the worst pioneer. The bathroom situation for pioneers, that would have been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And I imagine, you know, the wine quality with just all the bacteria, nothing would have been clean.
I think for female winemakers, though, we pretty much are looking like pioneers most days, so I'd be ready.
Actually, I don't think I would trust a wine if the winemaker, be it male or female, looks really good. Like, if they've been out in the field and they're wearing a tux like Alec Baldwin in 30 Rock,
like,
I don't think I would trust you.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've got the Pinot. Which
this is the 2024 Pinot Noir, the Matriarch, and really proud of this wine as well. I think 24 was like a solid vintage. It wasn't one, you know, I tend to remember the really bad ones or the really good ones. And I'm talking extremes. And 24, it went to barrel and everything was great. Definitely happy with it. But I think the surprise for me was, you know, 18 months later, it really just needed some time in barrel. And I remember tasting it and blending it and thinking, whoa, what happened? It was the ugly duckling that just became, you know, beautiful.
What were your expectations a year and a half ago versus, or when you first did it versus that time?
I like to be motivated by the wine. I know that sounds silly, but with the amount of hours that I spend making wine, I want to be super excited about it, even when it's in tank, even when it comes off the vineyard. And I'll link it to 25 to the 2025 vintage. I was just happy that it was good, because some years Pinot can be so challenging. So it was good, but I wasn't coming home at Christmas time after the harvest thinking, we've got something unreal. I knew it was good. Let's see where it's going to go. And then it just really superseded what my expectations in barrel. And then the 2025, it came off the vineyard. Perfect. It came across the sorting table. Perfect. So proud to see these grapes go across. It fermented well. It's in barrel now, and I just tasted it side by side. I had the chance to hang out with a really cool Italian winemaker on Monday this week. And so we did the 24 in bottle and the 25, and amazing.
Do you are you superstitious? Do you want to say good things about the wine before it comes out? Because no. I'm hearing you, your decibel level went lower and you're a little bit more, I don't want to say sheepish, but it's like in baseball. If a pitcher's got a no hitter going after the sixth inning, no one talks to the pitcher. Yeah. Everyone's like, just they stay away, you know? So
no, I'm not superstitious at all. I think I'm just my worst critic. So I will often, you know, with the team be really hard on wines that I make. But when I love a wine, I'm silent and I'm just quiet in the cellar and I will look at Brooke or Emma and say like, we got it. Like it's the best feeling ever for me. It's really just one of the best gifts ever is to come back to a wine 2 years later and truly love it.
Before we do the tasting notes of this one, actually we'll do the taste notes now. It definitely, like I'd love to get your impression. My first one's still more led by red fruit, some little of dark rhubarb. That was just on the first sip of it. Acid body, alcohol, everything is in place. But if I was just trying to describe it to the people listening, and that's sort of where I first go on first sip, I'll see on the second one. But what should people expect?
I think from a technical standpoint, the two things that I love about this wine, first, it is so balanced from nose to mid palate to finish. And the longer it sits in your glass, Matt, and I just open the bottle, it's going to become much more expressive. What I love about this wine, and you're going to get it in a minute right now because you just tasted it, is there's an iron on the finish. And I love that on a finish in Pinot.
It's one of the, it's if you're ever going to do blind tasting, if you start getting that iron or sometimes I would call it metallic cherry, but sometimes I get the metallic cherry maybe a little bit more from Peck than I do here, but just that sort of blood iron, but you don't want to use blood anymore because you know it might offend people, but
I think that's exactly what it is.
It's not about offend, it's more like do I want to taste bloody iron? It's like, no, you do, but it sounds weird. But that is like classic cool climate Niagara.
And I think give it another month or two in bottle. This was done in mid-March, so this is young. We don't usually flip a Pinot a couple months later for sale, but I can only release once a year, so I think this is going to be incredible as Pinot.
So how tough was it for you to start charging people for tastings?
That question, I didn't even think about it.
You had time.
I think I was drinking Pinot.
Fair point.
I think that it just comes down to business and having a voice to be able to say, like, I am making a product. We do need to charge for it. We are offering you a service. And so if I'm going to charge for it, what we've tried to do is offer the best service that we possibly can up here. Our expectations are through the roof. For me personally, I like we're charging you for a tasting, but I hope you leave here again impressed and thinking, I wasn't expecting that. We really want to kind of surprise you. And when I look at hospitality, I look at places personally like One Hotel, Four Seasons, Pearl Marsette, and those are like my star. So like places where I've gone and thought, this was incredible. And I'm not saying that we are like them or can even be like them, but internally I have a secret wish to make sure that we are always giving the top level that we can. And in the end, people just leave saying, I'm going to come back here, like come visit us on a beautiful day, sit in the vineyard, try the wines and relax.
So basically you want to try to be Michelin star.
Yeah.
Michelin star Mason.
I say it all the time to the staff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wish like for those of you who are listening who maybe know me or who have come here, you know that that's just that's something 100% I would say. Are we going to be able to do it? Yeah, we'll get there. Every year we're like, I don't even want to tell you all the things we put in behind the scenes to make this effortless this year. It's going to look effortless, but the team is just amazing.
Yeah, you are excited about this.
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm like, you won't even. Yeah, I'm excited and I'm not sharing all the secrets. So come and visit us to see it. You need to come. Please come with Amy and and see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. Trust me. We're going to be coming because we also have a place to stay that's very close here. Do you have a moment that sticks out from you from last year, a hospitality moment? And it might be hard to answer. There might be a whole ton. And sometimes it's hard to come up with a specific. But is there any moments that really stick out, either good or maybe bad, that from last year?
I can think of one of each. A good example, we had a really hot season last year and it was 30 degrees most days. It wasn't where we had 2 weeks of that heat wave like Ontario often does. We had an entire heat wave the whole summer. So the team was putting in something like 20,000 steps out here a day. A lot of people didn't know we were open in June. And then by July and August, we picked up a bit of traction and we had a day where we just got really slammed and we didn't have enough staff. And I went out to serve. I am not a server, but I can pour wine. But if I'm actually carrying a tray and glasses, and we needed all hands on deck, we were, and we all did it. and we gelled and we were able to execute, and everybody, I believe, had a great experience. Nobody was waiting. We were really sweating on the in the back, but we did it. And for me, I just felt like, I felt really excited and really just grateful to have such an amazing team. That was just, I can remember that day and how hot it was. On the bad side, I think, or, you know, more challenging for me, is I've never worked in a tasting room. I've also never been a server. So for me, I have a lot of trial and error learning how to set this all up. And I'm relying on the team to help me. But it was definitely challenging for me, for sure.
One final thought about this Pinot Noir, and then we'll do the Cap Franc next.
You just tasted it again.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, yeah. No. All those things you mentioned come out. But what I appreciate about this wine is super young. The cork just came out. It had 11 minutes in glass before we were drinking it. And yet you can already tell, it's like, okay, there's other things here. And if we decanted it for a couple hours, there'd be so much more. If you threw it away for a little while, and I'm not even saying like 15 years or something, but the analogy I always give is this tastes like a movie preview where you're like, oh, I can't wait to see that whole movie. Yeah. Like, oh, that looks funny. That looks great. Oh, I can't wait to see the whole thing. That's sort of how I feel when I taste this
wine. Yeah, there's way more stuffing, if we can use that expression, right now than there was when you first did. And keep it in your glass before you leave. You have to have one more sip, and you'll just see the evolution of it.
Yeah, I'll put that to the side. Before we do the Cab Franc, a quick shout out. Mm-hmm. 2019, Domaine K. Luce, Cab Franc. I went to visit. Mm. I was at K. Luce the other day. I've been here for 2 weeks in Niagara. I'm cat sitting. I'm on my own. So what do you do when you're by yourself at 3:55 p.m. On a weekday?
Yeah.
You do the 13-minute drive to K. Luce. They were lovely. Staff is great. And they said, here, do you want to try the 19 Cab Franc? And I, yes, I do. Drinking fantastic. I bought a bottle. One other thing, and I know this is your interview. Now I'm yammering too much. I want listeners to know, if you hear me praising winery, a winemaker, know that I'm not just doing this because it'd be uncomfortable to go, yeah, I tried your wine. It was shit. Kelly, you can back me up. I buy the wine.
100%.
Yeah.
You visit the wineries. I see you just sitting out on the patio. You know, you do drink the wines. You come here and you're talking to me, and you will talk about other wineries that you visited, where you like to go and sit, what Pinots you drink. You are absolutely a consumer. Yes.
Yeah. Like if I look at my cellar and compare just the percentage, not even the number of bottles. Obviously, I have more bottles now than when I was 30. That's going to happen. But the percentage that is so much Niagara. Like, I'd say it's probably 50% is Ontario, some BC as well. And yeah, no, I rave about it. So the point is, if you hear me say nice things about the wine, there's a good chance there is a six pack somewhere. But yes, the 2019 K. Luce Cab Franc was drinking beautifully.
That's great. That's another, you know, as you raise that that vintage, that is another vintage that also just needed a little bit of time in élevage and then also in bottle. And it came around because the 18 was just a warmer vintage. It was a stronger Cab Franc, I would say. But the 19s just did beautifully with time. And I think that's what I'm sort of seeing in a snippet, like short version with the Pinot, with the 24 for me. It just needed more time.
Let's take a quick break and we'll go to the Cab Franc. And we are back, and let's just be honest about it. Holy shit, that is a good Cab Franc. That is a good Cab Franc that we are drinking, the 2024. Obviously, there's no green, no stocky, no bell pepper. There's just a nice fight going on between the dark red, the spice, and there's some like chocolate notes going on as well on the finish. That is an excellent, excellent version of Cab Franc.
Thank you, Matt. I'm loving this one now. Again, waiting to see where it's going to be in 3 months, but I could drink this anytime, any day. It's just, I was saying to you, with the style of winemaking that I'm doing, and so are many other winemakers, where we're just not adding anything. So this, to me, if you're coming out to taste here, this is like all three wines we've just done. It's such a great show of what the site can do and what 20 Mile can do. And I feel like you can tell that they're all from the same site, and you can tell that it's the same winemaker as well.
So just for people that don't know, all the grapes, are they all just right in front of your place?
Yeah, they're right here. So when you come and sit and have a glass with us, you'll be sitting right in front of where they are.
It is one of the coolest things. We mentioned before, but it's the connection. There is something cool about, I am drinking with what is being grown.
Yes.
You know, there's just something that is so cool about that.
And we'll offer like a vineyard tour this year as well. We have two great people that one of the employees, she's actually pruned and worked this vineyard. So she's going to walk you through. So if you do want to know more about a vineyard, we've got that for you.
Are they as honest as you are? Do they also tell the Pinot Noir to fuck off the way you do?
Yeah, I know Kaylee would for sure. One of the girls would, because she's worked here and we've worked together for so long, and she's seen my emotional responses to Pinot Noir and all the swear words that come with it as well. So I think she would. And I think it's important to be to really just tell it like it is to the customer, because they don't always know. It's farming, after all, what's in your glass. And some people just don't know the labor, the time, and how many decisions go into a glass of wine, never mind a glass of wine from Ontario, from cool climate, never mind a glass of wine from Ontario, cool climate, and then it's Pinot.
And I think also that helps to justify when someone goes, oh, $68.
Exactly.
Then it's like, oh, okay. And, you know, that you can see that where it comes from.
Yeah, and the decisions, and things are more expensive.
Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the importance and how good you feel about being a mentor. I was talking with Matt Smith. You know, he talked about working with you and with Thomas. And then I was laughing. I'm like, Matt, you're young as you yourself, where you're not still like J.L. Grew, you know, you're not the, the older dean of winemaking.
OG.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Stratus. How important is that for you to mentor, to start giving back to the next generation of winemakers?
Yeah, I'd say it's really important to me. And it comes from a couple different things. I've been fortunate to have some really great mentors in my life in the winemaking world. And I think that I was always trying to ask myself, like, why are they giving me this much of their time? Why are they believing so strongly? And I just had to go with it. And I thought, okay, I'm going to pay it back somehow. And so as soon as I could, I just started. I mean, even with Mason, with the collab series, part of that is mentoring. But it's also really rewarding. And I value it as much as anything else. Probably it's top in my list of things that motivate me. If I could like start up a small school or something, I probably would do that.
By the way, shout out to the collab, you and Brooke, the Viognier. I remember buying a bunch of it too. It's crazy that I remember the wine. I forget people's names. I forget people's faces.
Yeah.
But I remember, I remember two summers ago bringing up the Viognier, and I think I sent a photo to you. I'm like, you know, here's what we're drinking.
Yeah, and that was also, you know, in that time when I started my own business, I realized, wait, I can make a change because the winemaker gets all the credit, but there's a team usually supporting them. And that's slowly shifting in the industry, and there's more recognition going to assistant winemakers. And I thought, wait, I can actually put Brooke's name on a label, on the front label. She doesn't have to wait 10 years. It would get her name out there. And then that's sort of what started it. I thought, let's do that. And then, but let's also, I also wanted to have mentors in my life more. I didn't want it just to end. So J.L. Grew was my mentor last year because I did a collab with him with Petit Verdot. And that's just amazing to have the opportunity to learn from him. One year I did all the interns at Caylus because they had been working for 3 years. They kept coming back. So they made the rosé, and they really made that rosé. Like, I wasn't there making it. I was just checking things. So mentorship, I think, is super important. And also, it's a hard industry to get into. There's a lot of barriers to entry. If you think you want to own a vineyard or become a winemaker, it's definitely a tough road. I think you need to have support. And I would love to support people.
It's funny, just the winemaking tree, like the winemakers' trees, like the Grews and the Batchelders, and you know, and you know, Paul Pender back in the day, and so many different people, and just how it goes down, and then with each generation.
Yeah, you have to pass it on for sure. It also makes a better place for Ontario as well, because we're sharing, knowledge sharing is only going to get us all ahead.
You excited for the summer?
I'm excited. It's a lot of work for sure. I'm excited for the team. I'm excited to have a couple days off too, also because the team should be able to float this.
What are you going to do with your time off?
I don't know, because like I don't really. So what I do now is I spend time with friends, and I've really just, as most people would normally, but because I am busy, I tend to just, there's always work. And so I'll put it off. But I find if you can just hang out on a weekend with a couple of friends, or just even a night, the next day I wake up feeling like I had a total mini vacation because I was just laughing all night long. I think that's really important.
Also, you're a hell of a friend, because you're going to bring good wine.
Yeah, why don't you want me as your friend? One of my longest friends, I've known her since I was 19, and she's followed through all this. She's seen it. And even in the crazy days when I left like a good job to go into winemaking, and I remember saying to her, like, just remember, one day you'll have free wine. And sure enough, she texted me this week. She goes, you're releasing this week. What do I need to buy? And I was like, you're not buying anything. And she's like, no, I want to support you. That's the craziest thing, is that they don't want free wine.
Yeah, you're in some ways you're very ambitious and you're a great winemaker, and in some ways you're a lousy business person.
Totally. It could go either way. You could go, I could be a really smart business person or just really like, I need you to try this Pinot. Take it.
I don't think you can be great at everything.
No, of course not. No.
My number one expression in life, or one of my main mantras, is if you like everything, you love nothing.
Yeah.
You have to pick the things you love, and there's other things you're not going to like.
Yeah.
It's like, for instance, and Dan knows this because I've interviewed him a couple times, Henry Appel Bacco Noir, incredibly well made. I hate it.
You don't like it. Okay.
Grange, the highest end Grange Australian wine, the Penfield, like all that stuff. I can't stand it.
Yeah.
I think it's shit.
Yeah.
You know, so, but if you like everything, you can't, you don't love a thing.
Yeah. You so, just like, I think for me, I just have to know what I like about wine that I'm not ever budging, and not everyone's going to like you. Same like that. You have to be okay with that as well.
You're never going to get 100% approval rating, but I think Kelly, you're going to get pretty damn close to 100%. It's a hell of a story. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the wine. Thank you for the roaring fire on another horrible day. I can't wait to see this place in the summer. Congrats on all the success, and I wish you nothing but the best, Kelly.
Great to catch up. And thanks for what you do for the Ontario wine industry. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.